good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We're not going to video stream tonight because I still feel kind of like might go into coughing spasms. Although, I went to see my doctor today, and after waiting for 45 minutes, he came in the examining room. He said, "What's wrong?" I said, "I've got this bronchitis." And he said, "Tell me about it." So even my doctor had it. So, you know, I got what I went in for, which was a steroid shot, cortisone, and feel a lot better. It's no medicine you can take for this crap. We'll be off tomorrow night. Brad Friedman will be filling in. So thanks in advance to Brad Friedman. A lot of weirdness, more weirdness going on. Was Rush Limbaugh on the air today? Do you know, Kathy? You don't know? I have no idea. I think he was in Seattle. Cops are looking for somebody who robbed a North Seattle pharmacy at gunpoint. The incident happened about noon in the 1500 block of North 115th Street. The robber, who was wearing a mask, demanded OxyContin. Police said he entered the pharmacy through the front door and exited through an unmarked rear exit. He was seen driving eastbound in a silver or gray four-door Volkswagen Jetta that was parked on North 115th Street. The suspect is a white man in his 50s, 5'9", with a fat build. He also was wearing a black hooded sweatshirt, a black glove on his right hand, faded baggy blue jeans, and white tennis shoes with black soles. The man is considered armed and dangerous. Anyone with information is asked to call the Seattle Police Robbery Unit at 206-684-5535. So Rush Limbaugh is out stealing his own now. I'll be damned. Well, in a sense, except for the fact that you had a gun, that means you're in deep doo-doo, Rush. But aside from the gun part, good for you. It's good that you're stealing them yourself instead of sending your housekeeper out to steal them for you by meeting drug dealers in the parking lots of, what was that place, Kathy? Denny's Restaurants. Rush Limbaugh, loose in Seattle. Watch out, y'all. Nothing like somebody who steals OxyContins, does crazy Nazi talk radio, and is armed. There's a Republican candidate for governor in Alabama. His name is Tim James. He's the son of former Alabama Governor Fob James. Fob. We have funny names here in the South for our men folk, especially the ones who run for governor. We have funny names down here. Fob. That was the former Alabama governor. Well, his son, Tim, is now running. And Tim promises to do away with the foreign languages that are necessary in the driver's license exam, because Alabama, believe it or not, has become very international. And a lot of people want to work in those chicken factories. So 12 languages to the driver's license exam is presented in 12 languages to make it easier for people to get a driver's license, become a tax-paying citizen. Oh, but the Republican gubernatorial candidate, Tim James, say no, he didn't like that.
I'm Tim James. Why do our politicians make us give driver's license exams in 12 languages? This is Alabama. We speak English.
Well,
if you want to live here, learn it. We're only giving that test in English. If I'm governor. Maybe it's the businessman in me.
Yeah.
But we'll save money.
Uh-huh.
And it makes sense. Does it to you?
It'll save money for us. Yeah.
It may just be the cynic in me, but does anybody else out there have the same feeling that he's maybe hampering the ability of his own citizens to pass this test when he says, "We speak English. Learn it."
Yeah. Y'all.
Shouldn't he be talking to, like, the school boards? You know, what is the ranking for Alabama and their statewide English test scores?
Well, if it weren't for Georgia, they'd be last. No, wait a minute. If it weren't for South Carolina, they'd be like, If it weren't for Mississippi, If it weren't for Louisiana, If it weren't for just pick one of them old states from the old Confederacy. They're always fighting each other to see who be last. Oh, Tim James, This Alabama, we speak English here.
It just cracks me up. Learn it. We speak English. Learn it. I mean, I feel like he ought to be, you know, going out and speaking in the public square or at the next teabag rally.
He probably will be.
Learn to spell it.
Yeah.
Look at your signs,
My daddy's name was Fobb. That's English. Fobb. Oh, Lord. Lord have mercy. This is Alabama. We speak English here. Mr. Tim, no, you don't. You really, really don't. Nobody in the South who is from the South speaks English. What is spoken here is a reasonable facsimile thereof, but it is not English. I defy you, Mr. James, to give me a definition from the English dictionary of the word y'all. Y'all, listen up here. I would like a definition of the word here. Listen up here, y'all. Whew. All right, the bankster business is really amazing. I got this thing today. It's from one of the bloggers over at where is Jackie blog at? MLive.com. A new study. I don't know if she's a blogger. She's a writer there. A new study from the Pew Research Center for the Public Interest estimates that the financial crisis that began in September 2008, engineered by the pigs you may have seen on television yesterday, that financial crisis has cost an average of $100,000 per American household. It's as if the average U.S. household burned $5,800 last year. That's according to a former Treasury Department economist, Phil Swagel, in a story on Bloomberg.com. That's how much each American household lost because of unemployment and lower earnings caused by the financial meltdown on Wall Street. But wait. There's more. According to the study, the average U.S. household lost $66,000 in stock holdings, which doesn't necessarily mean that you have a stock portfolio. It just means that where any type of fixed income that you have is probably involved in a stock portfolio somewhere. We also lost $30,000 in lost real estate value from September 2008 to the end of 2009 because of the financial crisis. Of course, that varies considerably across families based on their wealth. According to the study, the financial crisis in September 2008, quote, clearly exacerbated the pre-existing economic slowdown, turning a mild downturn into a deep recession. 5.5 million jobs were lost in the five quarters through the end of 2009 as a result of slower GDP growth. Of course, the human toll is harder to quantify, the study says. Millions of American families suffered losses of jobs, incomes, and homes, and the effects of those losses will play out on society for generations to come. The financial crisis of the past several years has had a massive economic cost for the United States. Trillions of dollars of wealth and output gone. Millions of jobs lost. Hundreds of thousands of families suffering hardships. These costs demonstrate the importance of taking steps to avoid future crises and the value of reforms that help achieve the goal. Meanwhile, the Republicans once again voted no today to hold open discussions about financial reform legislation. The Republicans want you to suffer. They want you to lose more money in your fixed income, in your investments, if you have them, in your job possibilities, in the value of your house, everything. Republicans hate America.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, the voice inside your head. Be careful of that. Got an interesting email from Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent. And it's not really about anything that happened. She's the San Francisco school teacher. Nothing about her classes. But I found this very interesting. She writes, Mike, I've loved every single minute of your rants about the Bangsters these past couple of nights. It's been a real trip down memory lane for me. Nightmare Alley is more like it. Back in the early 90s, I took a job with the West Coast branch of one of those blue-blooded investment banks that populate Wall Street, J.P. Morgan. Up to that time, I had actually believed in the myth of the American meritocracy. You know the one. Anyone can succeed if they only work hard enough. It didn't take long for me to figure out that any sort of real opportunity at this institution was closed to my kind. You see, as someone who had not attended an Ivy League school and whose father did not have connections to financial bigwigs, I was shut out. The attitude of the Bangsters was, you went to a state university? Oh, that's nice. Now bring me a cup of coffee. Note, this was in 1994, not 1954. The reactions of those banking bastards to a major national event, the Oklahoma City bombing, and to the daily reality of poverty on the streets of our fair city showed me their ignorance of and total lack of concern for anyone outside their exclusive little club. We got the news feed about the Oklahoma City bombing over the Bloomberg machine, which was just about the highest tech way of receiving financial news back then. A bunch of us hovered around the Bloomberg monitor, reading the headlines as they rolled in. When one employee expressed that she hoped they would catch the people responsible, the number one bigwig said, well, if they want to find the person who did it, they need to tail him all the way back to Lebanon. He was utterly shameless in making this remark. It was clear that he did not expect anyone to call him on it. And, of course, he was right. No one did. However, after they arrested Timothy McVeigh a couple of days later, I innocently asked this jerk if he had been surprised by the news. He just sort of chuckled and waved his hand dismissively, which was typical of these creeps. I also remember the comments the bigwigs made about the many homeless people we saw every morning on the sidewalk in front of the building. They need to get a job. Well, are you going to give them one, Mr. Investment Banker? Everyone has to start somewhere. I had to start at the bottom, too. Your bottom was your freshman year at Harvard. Their bottom is the gutter of Market Street. I worked my ass off to get where I am, and if I could do it, anyone can. Really? Did working your ass off include checking the box on your Ivy League application indicating that you were a legacy kid? Or did you actually have to dial the phone for your dad when he made the call that got you this job? To hear these men, and it was all men, talk about their difficult slog to the top and how hard they were working to stay there, you would have thought that they had begun their journey in the grip of grinding poverty and were now exerting themselves to the point of sweating blood. One last anecdote. I will never forget the bigwig who threw a freaking fit because, get this, they had not provided him with the correct type of desk blotter. You see, managing directors, or MDs, as they were called, had leather blotters. VPs and below had synthetic ones. This guy had been promoted to MD and flipped out to the point of yelling and screaming when his new office contained a desk blotter made of synthetic material. As he ranted and raved across the corridor from where I sat, I remember thinking, this is the last straw. I have to get out of here now. And 2 weeks later, I did. In the end, I am grateful for having had this experience because it taught me how things in this country really work. It was also the final step in my transformation from having been a clueless college Republican to embracing my roots as a real San Francisco liberal. Keep giving them hell, Mike. No one deserves it more, except the Bush crime family. K. We all have very interesting journeys from there to here, don't we? Huh? college Republican. I've had dinner with Kay and her husband a couple of times. I never would have thought she was a college Republican. Or her husband. Kay and Jim, nice people. All right, we're about ready for a break. When we come back, we have today's missive from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, and a bunch of other stuff we're going to toss out. Again, we're not streaming tonight because I'm still a little bit on the edge about going into those damn coughing spasms again. It's hard to manipulate the camera and the microphone and everything when I'm hacking. Although, I truly recommend anyone who has bronchitis, you know, you can drink green tea until you're peeing green, which I certainly did, but nothing gets it like a cortisone shot. Before the hour, while most of the country's attention on geekazoid actions by state legislatures has been focused on Arizona, the nutballs in Oklahoma really slipped one over on their female citizens in that state. last week, I think it was last week, or a couple of weeks ago, the Oklahoma legislature passed a package of anti-abortion laws that are pretty bizarre. This post originally appeared on Hullabaloo blog site. Doctors are now allowed in that state to hide birth defects from pregnant women to curb abortions. They don't have to tell them. The post says women are just slightly dumb animals who need to be drawn a picture and lectured to like a four-year-old before they can understand what they're doing. That goes without saying, of course. But giving doctors immunity from liability for failing to tell their patients about fetal birth defects? The writer says that seems just a tad much for me. Sure, the dumb bitches can't be allowed to make their own decisions about taking on a lifetime of care or consider implications for their own health and well-being. What the silly little twits don't know won't hurt them, right? But you'd think that the important members of society, like insurance companies, employers, would have a stake in something like this. And here, this is the Oklahoma legislature voted overwhelmingly yesterday, to override vetoes. See, the governor of Oklahoma vetoed a couple of these bills because they were insane. The legislator voted overwhelmingly to override vetoes of two highly restrictive abortion measures. One, making it a law that women undergo an ultrasound and listen to a detailed description of the fetus before having an abortion. Though other states have passed similar measures forcing women to have ultrasounds, Oklahoma's law goes further, requiring a doctor or technician to set up the monitor where the woman can see it. And the doctor or technician then has to describe the heart, the limbs, and organs of the fetus. No exceptions are made for rape or incest victims. The second measure, passed into law Tuesday, protects doctors from malpractice suits if they decide not to inform the parents of an unborn baby that the fetus has birth defects. The intent of this bill is to prevent parents from later suing doctors who withhold information in order to try to influence them against having an abortion. Governor Brad Henry, a Democrat, vetoed both bills last week. The ultrasound law, he said, was flawed because it did not exempt rape and incest victims and was an unconstitutional intrusion into a woman's privacy. And he painted the other measure as immoral. Governor Henry said, quote, "It is unconscionable to grant a physician legal protection to mislead or misinform pregnant women in an effort to impose that doctor's personal belief on a patient." The Republican majorities in both houses, however, see things differently. On Monday, the House voted overwhelmingly to override the vetoes, and the Senate followed suit on Tuesday, making the two measures law. Oh, two other anti-abortion bills are still working their way through the legislature. One would force women to fill out a lengthy questionnaire about their reasons for seeking an abortion and then post statistics online based on the answers. And the other restricts insurance coverage for the procedure. It's astonishing what Republican religious bastards are doing to this country. It never stops. These are Republicans at work. It never stops. State legislatures, the federal government, on street corners, in the churches, in the civic clubs, these vermin just continue to impose their right-wing religious madness on their fellow citizens. And given a chance, they'll do it to the whole country. Now, Democrats are cowardly weasels. There's no question about that. Although all of a sudden Harry Reid seems to be growing a pair. But they're, for the most part, cowardly weasels. Republicans, on the other hand, are militaristic, religionist, fascist, Taliban-style, Al-Qaeda-like thugs who will beat your ass into the ground, take away all of your freedoms, impose God's will on you, and then stand back and say, "Now don't you feel better?" So which would you rather be governed by? Cowardly weasels or the other group? Me? I'll take the weasels, because I can always grab one of those weasels eventually and politically wring its neck and replace it with a timber wolf. Republicans, scum, swine, America haters, women haters, haters of people who are not white, haters of immigrants, legal or otherwise, illegal immigrants, my ass. Immigrants, period. People who can't speak English. Alabama-style English. Y'all come over here. Come here. I want y'all to go out there in that there field. And I want you to pick me some of that cotton. All right? All right? Sorry, I don't understand you. I said, all right? I don't know what all right means. Do you know what y'all means? Is that when you're on a boat and it starts to, you know, flip? What? That ain't what y'all means. God. What do you do with stuff like this, huh? What do you do if you live in a proto-fascist, religiously fascist country? And I say proto-fascist because I don't think there's been this sort of religious fascism imposed. It's certainly not in this country. There have been attempts at various times to do this, but not like this. Not like this. Astonishing. If you're a woman and you live in Oklahoma, now if you're a good, submissive Christian woman, you're probably sitting back. Well, you wouldn't be listening to this program anyway. Your husband would come in and beat the hell out of you. But Good, submissive Christian women in Oklahoma are probably in deep and abiding agreement. Yes, I think the men in our legislature, every one of them, they know what's right. They do. So do I agree or disagree with passing these laws? Why, I really don't have an opinion. I'm an Oklahoma woman. I don't have any opinion about this at all. I am a Christian woman. I am a submissive woman. My husband is the leader in our family. Well, after God and Jesus. But I just don't have an opinion about that sort of thing. Abortion? Well, that should be removed. There shouldn't be one or any. Good God. "70% of lost manufacturing jobs aren't coming back," says the National Trade Group. The National Association of Manufacturers. And another extreme right-wing group who wants to destroy America. Only 30% of the 2 million factory jobs lost in the recession will be refilled, according to NAM. Of the 2 million factory jobs lost during the recession at U.S. manufacturers, fewer than 30% will be returning over the next 6 years, according to their estimate. Most of that hiring will come in 2011 and 2012. The remarks came from the association's economists during a job growth panel at the Milken Conference in Los Angeles yesterday, according to Bloomberg Businessweek. The National Association of Manufacturers, and they should know, forecasts a return of 500,000 manufacturing jobs by 2015, down from its previous estimate of 800,000. According to the Bloomberg story, forecaster IH Global Insight has a more optimistic outlook. It projects that more than 1 million of lost manufacturing jobs may be refilled, maybe, could be, don't know. During the job growth panel, the National Association of Manufacturers advocated a permanent research and development technology tax credit to help create jobs in the industry. The group also opposes federal charges such as taxes on medical device makers. just thought we'd slip that one in there. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Ooh, dangerous. Excuse me. 10 before the hour. From Prairie 2, just fleeing. The Republicans in the Senate are backing down their just say no position on the Wall Street reforms after Harry Reid changed his vote to no on this morning's vote to open debate. By doing this, Reid is in a position to call for a vote at any moment, and he announced that the Senate would remain open for business all night. Republicans would presumably be obliged to attend or read about the vote in the morning. Normally, this sort of parliamentary maneuver is not seen in the Senate, but since the Republicans have already gone past any imaginary line of decorum that had existed, Harry is taking off the gloves. There's a growing sense of urgency to create a mechanism for dissolving the Wall Street banks as the world economy threatens to collapse. The Asian markets took another big dip yesterday as the Greek tragedy spread through Portugal and into Spain. with Standard & Poor's downgrading their debt a notch. Spain is in much better shape than Greece, but is also much bigger. Portugal, Ireland, Greece, and Spain have all been drinking the Chicago School of Economics Kool-Aid to one degree or another. Nobody knows just how much peril they are really in, since it's unknown how much of their debt is hidden among complicated synthetic financial instruments created by, you guessed it, the Wall Street banksters. The Asian markets will open again this evening, our time, and if they don't accept the reassurances by the German government that everything will work out fine, then things could get ugly. The Wall Street banks have been using the interest-free money they have been getting from the Fed to pump up the markets by taking advantage of the carry trade. The carry trade is where you carry cheap money from one country into a country that offers a better return and enjoy profits with no real investment required. The risk to this is a sudden change in currency values, which could make you over-leveraged. That's Wall Street speak for broke. The sudden strengthening of the U.S. dollar as many people flee the sagging euro could be such a triggering event. The only way for an investor to avoid the worst happening is to sell off holdings at any price. This is called a market panic because buyers become scarce no matter how low prices go. The Chicago School of Economics says these things don't happen in a free market because there are no bubbles. They're still saying that and balk at any responsibility for the current depression and basically claim it's all in our heads. U.S. markets were up today anyway as the Fed confirmed that the free money will continue to flow to the Wall Street banks for some time to come. Gold was up worldwide with brisk buying. It's not everyone is fleeing the euro to the U.S. dollar. Some are just fleeing. PrairieNumeral2.com. Mr. Good News. You gotta love the way he writes, though. Gordon in Oklahoma City. Mike, I'm sure you've already seen that Fox News has reported that Noah's Ark has been discovered by a group of Chinese evangelicals. Let me pause for a moment. Think about that last sentence. Fox News reporting that Noah's Ark has been discovered by a group of Chinese evangelicals. Oh, my God. Back to Gordon. To no surprise, this turns out to be just another fake Ark discovery. But before some creationist blames the debunking of this story on a bunch of godless, liberal, homo-loving commies, that person should take a deep breath and listen. This time the exposure comes from another young Earth creationist and Ark hunter named Randall Price, who is professor at Liberty University. Yeah, that Liberty University. It seems our Dr. Price is all too familiar with this expedition of Chinese evangelicals. Here's the message from Dr. Price posted on a site that is familiar with Liberty University. This is Dr. Price talking, I was the archaeologist with the Chinese expedition in the summer of 2008 and was given photos of what they now are reporting to be the inside of the Ark. I and my partners invested $100,000 in this expedition, which they have retained despite their promise and our request to return it, since it was not used for the expedition. The information given below is my opinion based on what I've seen and heard. To make a long story short, this is all a fake. The photos were reputed to have been taken off-site near the Black Sea, but the film footage the Chinese now have was shot on location at Mount Ararat. In the late summer of 2008, 10 Kurdish workers hired by Parasut, the guide used by the Chinese, are said to have planted large wood beams taken from an old structure in the Black Sea area, planted them at the Mount Ararat site. In the winter of 2008, a Chinese climber, taken by Parasut's men to the site, saw the wood, but couldn't get inside because of severe weather conditions. During the summer of 2009, more wood was planted inside a cave at the site. The Chinese team went in the late summer of 2009. I was there at the time and knew about the hoax, and was shown the cave with the wood, and they made their film. As I said, I have the photos of the inside of the so-called Ark that show cobwebs in the corners of rafters, something just not possible in these conditions. And our Kurdish partner in Dogu Baba Ziat, the village at the foot of Mount Ararat, has all the facts about the location, the man who planted the wood, and even the truck that transported it. My God. Gordon, Oklahoma City. Jesus, Gordon, how can you be so funny and you and Bart Cop exist in Oklahoma? I don't quite understand that. Could you make any sense out of this? I couldn't either. That's what makes it so funny. Let's see, Chinese evangelicals and some Kurdish guides and then some Kurdish workers who went to went someplace and stole some wood. And then they took the wood into a cave. Now, the wood came from the Black Sea, and they put the wood in a cave near Mount Ararat. And then they went to the Chinese evangelicals and said, which is Kurdish for, good Lord, come and see what we've got. So everybody ran, and there were these wooden beams, and they're full of cobwebs. And the Kurdish worker said, see, which is Kurdish for, that's the ark. And the Chinese evangelicals said, which is Chinese for, wow, I think we just made a great discovery. So then the Kurdish workers and the Chinese evangelicals.
You wanted to see me?
Seven past the hour. I just got an email from our homegirl in Chicago, Jennifer, and she got some breaking news for us. The Republicans abandoned their blockade against legislation to clamp tough new controls on Wall Street. Yeah, they cut and run. Yeah, they did. Which means that likely to pass would be the most sweeping rewrite of financial reform rules, or financial rules since the Great Depression. According to, where are we getting this from? Huffington Post. Democrats and Republicans agree the Senate will ultimately pass landmark changes aimed at preventing a recurrence of the crisis that knocked the nation's financial system to its knees. The battle now begins over crucial details. Blah, 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 blah. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island, said, quote, there's been immense pressure bottled up inside the Republican caucus through these last three votes where they all voted no. A lot of their members have been very deeply unhappy with the direction their leadership has been taking them. Better heads prevailed, end quote. Democrats had threatened to hold the Senate in session all night, making their case that the Republicans were stalling legislation of importance to virtually every American. The Democrats have also been laying plans to make the legislation a major issue in midterm elections this summer and fall. The Republican retreat came one day after senior execs of Wall Street giant Goldman Sachs were denounced by lawmakers from both parties at a marathon Senate hearing. Blah, 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 blah. The Republican decision to relent came after Senator Richard Shelby from Alabama, the top Republican on the Senate Banking Committee, told his colleagues that he could win no further concessions from Banking Committee Chairman Chris Dodd in private talks. Senator Shelby said Dodd did agree to adjust some provisions that Republicans had complained would permit further bank bailouts. There are already signs that some Republicans were growing weary of continuing to block the bill. after Obama and other Democrats accused him of siding with Wall Street. Senator Olympia Snowe, Republican of Maine, said of her party's objections, quote, the point of all this was to make sure that as long as those discussions could bear results, that we would support that effort. Now we proceed to the floor for amendments on the remainder of the bill, end quote. Senator Bob Corker, a Tennessee Republican, said, quote, it's not just Republicans who are going to offer amendments. This may be a real debate, which would shock America, end quote. Yeah, you dumbass. Of course it would. You Republicans, all you Republicans can say is, tax cuts. We want some tax cuts. We want some tax cuts. We want some tax cuts. Why don't you sit down and shut the hell up? You know what I'm saying? All of you thugs. So there you go. The Republicans being the liar, and thanks to Jennifer for notifying me of that. Republicans being the lying, sneaking, unethical, immoral swine that they are, all of them. Yes, even the sainted Olympia Snowe, as long as she's a Republican. And the people who vote Republican are even worse because they enable these cretins to stay in office. Based on all of that, it was just a matter of time before these slime balls caved, which is what Republicans always do, unless, you know, they're bullies. They're like, we've said this before, they're like grade school bullies on the playground. As long as they outnumber what they perceive to be their opposition, that would be the Democrats in the Senate or the House. Of course, their real enemy are normal people out here in the real world. But as long as Republicans are in positions of power, they're real bully boys. They're just like the brown shirts or like the Gestapo. They're just absolute, snotty, arrogant, condescending bully boys. And if they don't get their own way, they just whine and suck their thumbs and stamp their feet and pee their pants and talk about how Obama's a socialist. And unions are the work of the devil. And women ought to go back to the kitchen or the bedroom where they damn well belong. But once they're out of a position of power, as long as there are some Democrats in power who know when to kick the Republicans' asses up around their shoulders, then work gets done. Republicans love to be beaten. They are masochistic that way. Hit me, flail me, make me sign off on Democrat-sponsored legislation, anything. They are. They're masochists. And once you understand that, if you're in a leadership position in the House or the Senate, once you understand what you're dealing with, these little bully boys, beat them. As long as you beat them, you'll get what you need from them. Just beat them, kick them, stomp them. Go in their hair. Do whatever it has to, whatever it takes to satisfy their lust for pain. But give it to them. Yeah, I mean, take a look at John Boehner. Is that the face of a masochist? Look at him. Look at Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell looks like he has a perpetual sign not hanging to his back that says "Kick me," but taped across his forehead that says, slap me, repeatedly. And poor old John Boehner, huh? How about him?
Well, we're never going to do this. You like my tan? kick me, please. Oh, God, do it again. Oh, God, do it again.
Bunch of freaks. So, the thugs blinked. The Democrats developed the spine. Oh, good for you. I mean, I'm not gonna, I don't even care if it's bad legislation. I don't think it could be in this particular instance. But just to see the Democrats, conduct themselves the way you have to conduct yourself in the cesspool that is the United States Senate, where you have 41 of these freakish bastards called Republicans. Kick their asses. That's what you have to do, boys. Kick them hard. They love it. And they'll respond. Twits. God. Where was I? Oh, by the way, yes, let me announce again. We are not you streaming tonight. We're not streaming video. because I still have this cough thingy going, and I don't want to go into those damn coughing spasms again and have to grab dials and switches and screw everything up. And tomorrow night, Brad Friedman will be filling in for us. Tomorrow morning, before the sun rises, we will Kathy will be getting this cardiac ablation. So we will not be here tomorrow night. Brad Friedman has agreed to sit in. We'll be back Friday. The legislators in Hawaii passed a measure yesterday allowing a state agency, that would be the Department of Health, I believe, to ignore repeated requests from a person or organization for President Obama's birth certificate. The measure approved by the state legislature yesterday would carve an exemption in the state's public records law and allow officials to ignore all kinds of duplicative requests, including those for Obama's birth certificate. Hawaii Health Director Dr. Chiome Fukino has issued two statements since 2008 saying she had seen vital records proving Obama's a natural-born American citizen, born in Honolulu to a Kenyan father and American mother. State officials say they still get between 10 and 20 emails every week seeking verification of Obama's birth. Oh, my God. The bill now goes to Governor Linda Lingle. So there you have it. The Hawaii legislature has finally said, enough already. Oh, you teabag freaks.
You know, the one problem I have with that is if you want to know where Obama was born, can't you just figure out where his mother was at the time?
Right.
I mean, duh.
Was his mother in Kenya when he was born? I don't think so. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Chances are they were at the same place.
Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost. I'm tired of fighting.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past here. Remember Mike Revelle, two-term senator from Alaska, who got into the presidential primaries? He said today, this was prior to the news that the Republican resistance to Wall Street reform has collapsed. He said earlier today, quote, whenever something comes up that Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is opposed to, like finance reform now, he just threatens a filibuster. Then Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid backs down, and pundit after pundit says you need 60 votes to pass it. Baloney. You need 60 votes to overcome a filibuster. But a filibuster is a really costly thing to do. I used to filibuster for 5 months to end the draft in 1971. I succeeded. I'm proud of what I did. I helped end the war in Vietnam. But I paid a price politically and among my colleagues for using the filibuster. The filibuster is a tool you can use for good or for ill. The Dixiecrats used it for bad reasons to delay civil rights legislation. I used it for good to end the Vietnam War. Right now, the vast majority of Americans want strong finance reform legislation. So let the Republicans filibuster and bring the cots out, make the Senate be in session 24 hours a day. The public will rightly view them as regressive and obstructionist, end quote. Mike Revelle, quoted at Institute for Public Accuracy's press release. Now, regarding those Chinese evangelical archaeologists, Michael in Roswell writes, oh yeah, every 10 or 15 years they have to trot out a story about Noah's Ark, probably using the same piece of ossified timber because the faithful have pretty short memories. This is about branding, not science. It's necessary to provide a very small, relatively rational jumping off place. We found some wood, to make great leaps of faith. And it must be from Noah's Ark to ever more fanciful flights of imagination. Therefore, everything in the Bible is literally true. It doesn't really matter to the faithful. If they believe they can fly up into the heavens and sit on clouds with Jesus as the world is incinerated, they'll believe anything. This is supposed to impress the lay skeptics. Does it compute to them that I could take a gangbanger from L.A., give him a couple hours of instruction in writing narratives, hand him a few magic mushrooms and a fistful of tubes of model hairpin glue and a few yellow legal pads, whisper, "Tell me about God," in his ear, and end up with something just as scary as Revelation? Nah. Michael and Roswell. Well, that's how John wrote the narrative that is Revelation, the book of Revelation, some people say. He just ate too many of those Negev Desert magic mushrooms. Somebody came by on a camel. "Hey, John, check these out." Woo! And John diddeth. All right, what else we got? I think I touched on this last night. I don't know if we'll have a chance to get into it at all tonight. Maybe later. I tell you what, we are going to open up the phone lines here during this break, and when we come back, we'll take some phone calls. You want to do that? Huh? All right, we'll do that. What else are we going to do? I don't know. All I know is Kathy and I have to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go to this procedure, and it's got my brain sort of clouded tonight. So let me see here. All right, let's do that. We will take a break momentarily, and when we come back, we'll take some phone calls. What else? Oh, yeah, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. You know who he is. Yeah, you know what's really kind of bothering me? I am not really in favor of outing people unless they are doing things, unless someone knows they're gay or people know they're gay and the person who is closeted is doing things that harms folks, that harms other people who happen to be gay, then I think the outing is deserved. Lindsey Graham hasn't done that, to my knowledge. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he's voted for anti-gay legislation back in Crazy Land, which is either Columbia, South Carolina, or Washington, D.C. But there are some Republicans who are going after him, and they're saying publicly in various forums that, because Lindsey Graham is gay, he is being blackmailed into voting a certain way or saying certain things. The part of that story that is highly offensive to me is the fact that the other Republicans who are doing this to him are doing it strictly for political gain. They no more care about Lindsey Graham's sexual orientation than they care about, the price of Roquefort cheese at the local Winn-Dixie. What they want to do is destroy Lindsey Graham so they can get a more hard right character to replace him. I'll have some more on this when we come back, because this really irritates the hell out of me. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 past the hour. So Lindsey Graham, the benighted senator from South Carolina, who is being attacked by homophobes in his own party, not even formally outing him, but making references to his sexual orientation from a political point of view. And one of the reasons most recently is because Graham said the other day he thinks Arizona's new immigration law is unconstitutional and that, quote, it doesn't represent the best way forward, end quote, when it comes to addressing illegal immigration. He added, however, that the law reflects, quote, what good people will do, end quote, when they're left with no other options. Speaking at a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing with Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, who is the former governor, of course, of Arizona, Graham said Congress eventually needs to tackle immigration reform, but it'll be impossible to achieve reform until citizens in states like Arizona feel that the borders are secure. And he added, quote, in this environment, there's no hope of it passing, end quote. And a sheriff, who's the sheriff, Kathy, in southern Arizona, in a county, that borders right up against Mexico, he said today he will not be enforcing this law. And he's not of Hispanic descent. He has a European-sounding name. But what happens, and it happens all the time, if you are a Republican and you have something in your life that you would just as soon not have people know, and for the most part that is either you're cheating or your spouse or you happen to be gay, the happen-to-be-gay part will come out as a result, especially if you're a senator like Lindsey Graham, who is gets a lot of attention. You will be outed by members of your own party. And you will be outed for a political reason in order to destroy you in your home state. These people who are talking about Lindsey Graham are doing so because they themselves are homophobic and they know that so many of the voters in a good Christian state like South Carolina are also homophobic. And so therefore, painting him with that brush or outing him in the smarmy way that these Republicans are doing, you know, at these forums, well, I don't care if Lindsey Graham happens to be homosexual. I just wish he'd come out and talk it, say it, so they couldn't keep blackmailing him. You know, that kind of thing. Rancid bastards. I swear to God. I swear to God. Oh, well. You know, live by the sword, die by the sword, right? Is that right, Lindsey? Warren is in Revere, Massachusetts, listening on Sirius. Hello, Warren.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How about you?
Oh, all right. I'd like to wish your wife good luck tomorrow.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I forgot to do that when she screened me there, but you made a comment yesterday, and I didn't manage to get in, but you were kind of on the same line today a little bit. About like how you wish that the American people maybe could have a moment of Jungian collective consciousness and just get sick of this crap.
Uh-huh.
You know, all this far-right teabagger.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to call them anymore because it seems like there's like 100 factions. There's neocons, there's corporatists, there's Jesus freaks, there's teabag freaks, you know.
Well, there's a collective noun that you can use.
Yeah.
And it's losers.
I agree with that. But one of the characteristics, right, of fascism, you know, I know you probably know a little bit about old Mussolini.
Oh, yeah.
The original symbol of fascism was a bundle of sticks tied together with over and under axe heads.
Right.
That says a lot. You know,
that's where the word comes from, actually.
Sure, yeah. You know, it's kind of like bringing a bunch of disparate elements together, and they're stronger together, all tied together, as long as they've got those kind of authoritarian axe heads around them, you know?
Right.
Ready to chop them in half at the first, you know? I mean, look what happened with the brown shirts in Germany, you know? I mean, Hitler purged them in, like, shot, you know, had them all, what was it, Night of the Long Knives?
Night of the Long Knives. That's the thing about fascism. Capitalism uses people until they're no longer usable and then kicks them to the curb. Fascism uses people until they're no longer usable and then murders them.
Yeah, and I mean, do these teabaggers really think that they're valuable to these multi billionaires? Yeah. You know, and they're multinational corporations, you know?
That's the thing, Warren, that I can't figure out why these teabaggers think that millionaire thugs like Glenn Beck give a damn whether they live or die. All these teabaggers are is a platform for these incipient little fascists like Glenn Beck to stand on while they spew their poison and collect the money. And the teabaggers, you know, Glenn Beck eventually will either lead them all in a mass mutual suicide, like Jim Jones, or he will just, you know, walk away with the money and disappear like so many of these turd people do. So I don't understand what the baggers get, out of identifying with Glenn Beck. I guess it's because they're such losers that they see some psychopath like Glenn Beck. Well, he's got a radio show. Well, he's got a TV show. Well, you know what? Glenn's on 9,000 radio stations, so he must be really, really smart. You know, I mean, what are you going to do?
I'm not going to listen to him for one thing.
Right.
Can I drop a couple books real quick?
Sure, go ahead.
You ever read Escape from Freedom by Eric Fromm?
No, I've read Eric Fromm, but not that one.
In that one, he was writing during the Third Reich, during World War II, and he really breaks down the psychology of fascism in a way that it opened my eyes a lot.
All right.
And another good one, I think, that speaks to what's going on today is It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis.
Oh, yeah, that one I have read, yeah.
I mean, that's paling to a T right there.
The only thing, Warren, thanks. We're getting some static on your call. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in, though. The only thing about It Can't Happen Here that was a little bit, I don't want to say off-putting, but a little bit weird, was it was written in the vernacular of the times. And if you've read that book, it's just difficult. It's difficult to read because of the what now feels like that stilted kind of Americanese that Sinclair Lewis used. Right? That's a good sentence. That'll get you far, Mike. Carol is in San Antonio, Texas, also listening on Sirius. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Mike. This is Carol, and
yeah.
Glad to talk to you. You have added that wonderful word to my vocabulary, and I chuckle every time I say it, rat bastard.
Oh, my God.
I hope I don't get you in trouble.
No, not at all. We're allowed to say that one, rat bastard. What is it about that phrase or that hyphenated word that is appealing to you?
I live in the land of flying monkeys, uh-huh, known as the state of Texas.
I see.
And we have tons of them here.
Yeah, well, I live in Georgia, dear.
I go to Atlanta often. My husband works for Hewlett-Packard, and we're over there very often. So I do know. In fact, we mark that off of places not to retire.
Right, absolutely.
But I wanted to share with you that I did call my governor today, you know, Rick the pretty hair boy,
yeah,
Perry.
As Molly Ives used to call him, Rick Good Hair Perry.
Yes, he is. Molly right. Had him just tagged perfectly.
Didn't she?
But anyway, my concern is now we have a representative, a Republican from Tomball, Texas, over by Houston, and mm-hmm, her name is Debbie Riddle, and she is going to introduce into our legislature, which only meets every other year. I don't know why that is. We've got a state, you know, just as big as can be, but we can only meet every other year.
Uh-huh.
And so anyhow, Debbie has this law that she wants to get passed to make an immigration statement as Arizona has.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. And I knew it would be happening. But I guess what I pulled up Greg Abbott, the Attorney General's office. I pulled up David Dewhurst, who is our Lieutenant Governor, and I pulled up Rick Perry's websites. And I thought, oh, dear, we've got this big problem here in Texas. We're just going to have illegals just, you know, they're just overrunning this place.
Right.
And surely the governor is aware of it. Couldn't find a damn thing on his his webpage. It's hidden there, but you have to really click around to get to it. So I called the governor and I said, you know, if you all weren't such big hypocrites, I could believe that maybe this is an issue. But I said, I live in a city where 65% of the population are Hispanic.
You're right.
So we're going to be, you know, picking up lots of people. The police are Hispanic, so I don't know if they'll be picking each other up.
And you know the irony in San Antonio, that's where the Alamo is, isn't it?
Absolutely, and what a degradation of that great monument. But the whole thing is, Mike, is unless we approach it from the fact, you know, we have this place called the Colonias.
Carol, hold on a second. I want to hear the rest of what you got to say, but I have got to break here for some commercials. See if we can pay a few bills. Stay right there, Carol. We'll come back in a second. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malone.
W's got a mission, yeah. W's got a plan, W's got a pistol, it's burning in his hand. This is turn the world into one big Texas. What?
Seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, and we're talking with Carol in San Antonio, Texas. All right, where were we? You called everybody, and you told them they were hypocrites in Texas state government because these damn immigration laws.
Well, they are. It's a joke, Mike. I've been here 20-some years of my life, and we've invited these people in ever since World War II when we established the Colonias and said, we need you guys to come up and work these ranches.
Yeah, what are the Colonias?
The Colonias is a place down in the Rio Grande Valley, and it's been down there for about 40-some years where we have really displaced and disenfranchised every brown person that we ever wanted to come and work the ranches and the agricultural side of our business here. These places were sold to Mexicans, illegals and legals. Basically,
they're like big slum city. Okay,
yes.
Now I know what you're talking about. I think I read something about this some time ago in Mother Jones. Yeah, they don't have running water. They don't have electricity unless it's bootleg electricity. Now I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
and so for us to sit here as citizens of Texas and say that we're disturbed about illegals is the biggest joke in the world. These people come in. They work hard. Many of them, they're just abused from one side of the border to the other. Their own country does nothing for them.
Right.
And then they come to America to try and just live and make a living because they can't make one down there. And basically, we abuse them by not paying them, cheating them out of their money. And, you know, we got peach farmers up here in Fredericksburg, Texas, and they fly planes down and pick these people up and bring them in.
Sure.
And you know, I'm tired of if we're going to fix this, then we need to sanction employers who hire them. We need to give them a pass. If they're already here, I don't know how you deport 12 to 20 million, whoever's numbers is right on that. And thirdly, we got to hold Mexico's feet to the fire. We've given them NAFTA. We're sending our tax dollars down there. We're importing into their country all of our weapons to fight all this border stuff with the drugs. And yet we put two of our own border agents in prison when they shot one of those silly rat bastards coming over with marijuana, shot him in the butt, and then that guy got off, and they put the drug, border agents in prison for a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember that. Well, we were talking about this last night, and I think it was last night or the night before. The best thing that we could do to end the immigration situation, if that's the goal, is to rescind NAFTA, get rid of NAFTA. I mean, that was something that Bush, Clinton, and Bush 2 did and I think Clinton has more or less had second thoughts about this now, but it's been horrible. And the other thing is to declare that American-grown marijuana all marijuana, I guess, is legal. I'm not, I have a real problem with drugs, with hard drugs, but marijuana to me is a damn plant. I mean, let's make bananas illegal.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, we could just get the Senate and the House of Representatives of this country to smoke a doobie every day. We might get something done.
You crack me up, Carol.
I'm learning from the master, you and Tom Hartman.
Well, you've got a couple of crazy people you're listening to, huh?
Well, I love you both, and good luck to you and your good wife tomorrow. I hope everything goes for the best.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. Carol, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Take care, okay?
Okay. Take care of yourself, buddy.
All right. Bye-bye. I like her. I really do. She's the kind of person. You can just tell about people the way they sound. We have a lot of listeners like that we hear from, but you can just tell that Carol is somebody you'd like to just go have a glass of sweet tea with. That's a drink here in the South, sweet tea. Remember, one of the times we went to New York City, we went to a restaurant on the Upper East Side and said, can we get a glass of sweet tea? And they looked at us like we were from Venus.
Yeah, I mean, if you order tea in the South, it's sweet.
Sweet tea.
Period.
Right.
You have to ask for unsweet tea.
Right. Right. I remember one time I was traveling near Dublin, Georgia. Had some car trouble, and some good folks in Dublin, Georgia picked me, and the person I was traveling with picked us up. And we had to send all the way up to Macon, Georgia to get the part because they didn't have it in Dublin, Georgia. So we spent the night at these folks' homes. They just opened up their home to us, their trailer home. But, they had an extra room back there. They said, we all can stay here while we wait for this part to come in. We said, well, that is really kind. So the person I was with said, and she was from New Zealand, kind of English-like in her habits. And she said, the woman on the trailer said, can I get y'all something to drink? And Vicky said, could I have a cup of tea? And the woman said, why, sure. I knew what was going to happen. So this woman reached up in her cupboard and she brought down a jar of Nestlé instant tea with lemon flavoring already in it. And the English don't drink lemon in their tea, whether they're English in Australia. Now, if you're listening to Australia, don't get all pissed off. I know you don't want to be referred to as pommies, but people are influenced. Canadian, Australian, New Zealand, whatever. Indian. So anyway, this woman brought down this jar of Nestlé instant tea powder and threw a couple teaspoons in this drinking glass and put it under the faucet, filled it up with water, stirred it up, and handed it to Vicky. And Vicky looked at me like, you Americans are bloody well crazy. You're all insane. Every one of you is absolutely mad. So Vicky, being the polite immigrant that she was, just sat there and drank the stuff. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. We are talking about the usual nonsensical things we talk about every night, right? A couple of emails here. This is from the Foxhole Atheist. Hi, Mike. I was just thinking about these new fascist laws that mandate folks to show me the papers. I was stationed in Texas for a year and a half. There's a large population of U.S. citizens who happen to be of Spanish descent serving in the military. I wonder what's going to happen when off-duty soldiers are rounded up and deported because of these new laws. Just a thought. Yeah. And Mark in San Francisco, subject line, forget Kansas, what the hell is the matter with Oklahoma? Greetings, Mike. You and I know that these Oklahoma laws only apply to the poor and the lower middle class, otherwise known as the soon-to-be poor. He's referring to those anti-abortion laws. No, Mark writes, the wealthy daughters and wives victimized by rape, incest, or just cursed with an unwanted pregnancy will find a licensed, competent doctor who will perform the necessary procedure privately. No problem. Now, for the rest, they're just fodder for the advancement of unscrupulous politicians climbing upwards on the backs of the ignorant and hopelessly backward. Mark in San Francisco. Bob the Poet from Tennessee. Hey, Bob.
Carol gives me heart. I've got a brother and his family and nephews down in Texas.
Yeah.
To know she's down there makes me feel a little better.
Doesn't she sound like a nice person?
Certainly does. Certainly
really,
does.
Really does.
And I certainly hope you remember to breathe and hope things are better than what you fear for tomorrow. And
yeah,
you
well,
get through it okay.
Yeah, no, we're, we've got a pretty good heart, dude. We have good insurance through my union. And we're pretty confident this procedure will go off as planned. It's about a 4 or 5 hour situation, and then we'll be finished with it.
Well, and being a poet, I'd rather think of Valentine's and
right
when it comes to hearts.
I hear that. So would we, and we're not poets.
Well. I want to talk about Arizona. You know, I understand they have some kind of immigration problem over there.
Oh, you hear that? You've heard that somewhere?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I think I heard that first in 1947 when I first visited. The local people that were there, of course, they were kind of, the ones that I knew were descended from immigrants, too, because Cortez and his band, as it spread out,
mm-hmm.
kind of were the first unwelcome immigrants into Arizona. You know, the Indians out there used to do a nomadic thing. They could tell by what kind of plant was growing at a particular place in a semi-arid part of Arizona,
mm-hmm.
how deep down you'd have to dig to find water. They knew where on a certain time to plant a little bit of corn and it would make it, and they made their rounds.
Mm-hmm.
But then these immigrants kept coming. In 1947, there weren't too many, but they had started this like a retirement thing. The people from the east and the northwest and midwest, that had asthma problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Would want to move to Arizona because it was a dry climate.
And they were all light-skinned.
Well, the most of the people up there that were in the factories at that time were.
Yeah.
And there was a migration from the south that was filling in the jobs of the people that were leaving to retire down in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this white influx is the real immigration problem. It's a terrible environmental impact on the area. The Phoenix, when I first went there, was small town. I had a great aunt there.
Mm-hmm.
It was a town, you know,
mm-hmm.
and now it's a huge metropolis, and the aquifer and everything is getting drained. It's certainly not these few visitors that we have now that is the most threatening to the environment.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And I think people in Arizona, older people, by that I mean culturally older, or older in a civilizational sense, who've been there for millennia, or whose genetic material has been there a lot longer than the pale faces. I think those folks understand exactly what you're talking about. You know, yeah, they have an immigrant problem, but it didn't start this year or last year, and it's not because of Mexican workers trying to find a job. It's much deeper than that. You're absolutely right, Bob.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, thank you. I appreciate your checking in tonight, Bob. Take care, and thanks for the good wishes for tomorrow. We'll do that just fine. Thanks, Bob. Ignacio is in Chicago, listening online.
Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Man, I'm a little agitated here. So first off, I want to say I'm a big fan of yours. Used to listen when you used to be over here at WLS.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Chicago. Great times, and you have educated me throughout the years. However, the reason I'm agitated is because of, to some degree, what's happening in not only Arizona, but throughout the United States, as a matter of fact. Even here in the border, the surrounding counties in Illinois.
Right.
I'm beginning to feel like a Jew living in Germany in 1934.
That's understandable.
I hate to say this. I hear a lot of progressives and liberals chuckle when they talk about illegal immigrants and the legals and the illegals, because I tell you what, it sounds like white people in the South talking about the good niggers and the bad niggers. And the first thing I want to very, very clearly state is that the usage of the word illegal to many of us is an extraordinarily racist and a derogatory term.
Oh, sure.
The term should be the correct, because actually the fact of the matter is that legally, nobody who's here without any authorization to be here, you know, legally or without any authorization to work here, is basically an undocumented alien or a worker without any authorization to work, without a work permit.
Right.
So to call them illegals is basically, it's a slur. It's a pejorative term that's used to distance the humanity of the people. I heard the other day here in Chicago, somebody was saying, well, you know, I really sympathize with those landowners, the farm owners who's having people trample on their land. And I'm thinking, are you for real? You care more about a farmer or a large rancher who has territory, land, money, and you're more concerned about the property rights of that person than the actual people who are in many cases starving to death in Mexico? Another thing that I wanted to bring up, because, you know, Carol, you surprised me, Mike, when you said that Carol was sounding like a wonderful woman that you'd love to sit down and have coffee or tea with. I found her to be extraordinarily patronizing and backhanded racist in some of her comments. When she made some comment about how the Alamo was a great symbol. A symbol of what? White imperialism?
Well,
racism,
No, I don't think that's what she meant at all.
No, I think that's what she meant. Now, I could be wrong.
Wait. There's no doubt in my mind that you're wrong. You completely misheard her.
Maybe I did.
No, there's no maybe here. And I can understand why. I hear your anger. I understand your anger to the extent that I can, since I am not Latino. I hear your anger. But I don't think that it's a good idea to so quickly jump when you hear people using phrases that, because we don't know. There's a lot of white people that don't understand, and I think it's incumbent. Let me put you on hold. I'll come back after the break. It's incumbent for white people to be educated. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. White people had to be educated about black issues, had to be educated about, Christians had to be educated, the progressive ones, about what happened in Germany to the Jews, on and on and on. Life is a process of education. So I hear your anger, in so many ways is justified, but I know you misheard Carol. Ease up a little bit until you have taken some time to educate those of us who use the wrong terms. We'll be right back. Stay there, Ignacio. I'll come back to you.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We are talking with Ignacio, who's in Chicago. All right, yes, where were we?
Okay, well, you were just correcting the kind of the attitude where I was coming from.
Yeah.
Because I believe that you were asking me to be more understanding of perhaps some of the ignorance or just the simple
fact.
Well,
not understanding in the sense of tolerating it, but or accepting it, but understanding in getting the fact that this country is in a huge transition right now,
yes,
not just economically, but ethnically, racially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things that are happening, and it's whiplash. I think that's part of what's driving these poor, miserable teabaggers is they are rigid. They're not like reeds that can bend in the wind. They're more like saplings, and they're going to break. And they won't bend. They won't understand that this country is in a huge transitional period. So all I'm saying is people who have the knowledge, like you do, should be more inclined, in my opinion, more inclined to help people understand. If they choose not to understand, then screw them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to me, it's at least make the effort. I used to make an effort with conservatives until I realized, screw them.
Right.
But at least make the effort.
And, I totally agree with what you're saying, and absolutely. I think one of the most, I think the difficulties for me is that I see that we're headed into a crisis period. As I think somebody else said earlier in the show, that now there's talk about maybe something like this being passed in Texas. There was an ad that was running in Alabama, by some, I believe it was, of course, a Republican.
Yeah, we played it tonight.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is happening and I do really, really sincerely mean this because I've studied the Nazi period in German history.
Yeah.
And it's concerning to me when things are happening. And you know, you're very right. I don't hear that many Mexicans, and I really use the term Mexican because we're not rounded up as Latinos, you know, we're rounded up as Mexicans.
Right.
You know, I've read this piece over on Yahoo News about how they're people that used to stand by, the Home Depots and whatnot are being yelled at by people that drive by, go back to Mexico. They're not saying go back to the place where Latinos come from, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, what language do Latinos speak? They don't speak Latin. I took 4 years of Latin. It's not what Latinos speak. So my point is that there is I lay the blame on this at the feet of a lot of the educated Mexican-American Chicanos that went to school in the 60s and 70s and 80s, got their PhDs, and then hightailed it out of the political arena to continue a civil rights movement that was very irresponsible in allowing this idea that, well, the Mexicans that are coming across the border now, well, they're not like us because they're not educated like us.
Right.
I wanted to touch on another thing that's very important that Carol mentioned about how and again, maybe I will agree with you that I completely misunderstood what she said.
Yeah.
When she said that, well, we gave them NAFTA the Mexican government has completely betrayed the Mexican people in the United States because for decades it has allowed the system, the socioeconomic system in Mexico to go to pot.
Right.
And yes, of course, I think you understand and a lot of other listeners understand that the Mexican socioeconomic political structure is subject to the American political and economic necessities of cheap labor. NAFTA was not for the movement of populations between Canada, United States, and Mexico. It was a movement to move capital.
Oh, sure.
I believe in my concept of immigration justice, not immigration reform, but immigration justice, there should be, as it is in the European Union, the free movement of Mexicans, Canadians, and Americans, a free passage between the three
mm-hmm.
countries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as you stated earlier, because we are in a state of incredible flux, we are states like Arizona and New Mexico and Texas, states like Alabama, Georgia, where there was never the kind of Mexican immigration or even Chinese or Native or Indian migration or immigration to those countries or to those states, that there is all of a sudden this sense of loss of white entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
That, for as you understand very clearly, this was a country that for hundreds of years was ruled by the paradigm of white supremacy.
Well, that's true. And to give that up for
many people.
Yeah, in the collective consciousness of white people. And there's really nothing being given up. It's the illusion of power.
Absolutely.
White folks have not had power. The white beneath the white elites, nobody has had power in the longest time. But one more thing, I've got to move on, Ignacio, and don't be a stranger. I want to hear from you more often. But Carol's reference to NAFTA was not, oh, what a wonderful gift we gave to Mexico. Not at all. Carol understands NAFTA. And like I say, a lot of times I get people on this program, like Carol, who use irony, statements of irony, statements of sarcastic statements, phrases like rat bastard. I don't know where she got that term. And they know exactly what they're saying. And a lot of people can miss because sometimes we are too literalist in the way we listen. So that's all I wanted to say. I let callers speak for themselves. But I just want to make sure you understand that she was being entirely sympathetic or understanding to what's going on. She's a smart woman. She's smart the way you are, Ignacio. Although, you know, no white person can have, I can't, she can't, no European can have the understanding that people of color have. But, you know, we get it intellectually. Thanks, Ignacio. I appreciate what you had to say.
Radio right from the left. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, Irish Dave writes in, Mike, my mother, a California native, thought my second wife, a native of Ecuador, spoke Mexican. While my New York friends were sure she spoke Puerto Rican. LOL. Or not. Tonight's trivia fact from Irish Dave, Hispanic was created and used widely by Nixon and his minions for the 1970 census. Bob Kincaid of HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I know a lot of you are familiar with it. If you're not, you should go there. Hell, the website is worth the trip. The program is great. Anyway, Bob Kincaid writes, Mike, listening to Ignacio speak to immigration issues reminds me that the whole concept of Latino is a brownwash. The fact is, the folks the sorry, miserable, right-wing, xenophobic fascists are complaining about are peoples whose ancestors have been here in excess of 12,000 years. Latino allows us to pretend that they are as European, as alien to this land as we are. What a sick lie. When our side learns to start asking, why do you want to cheat the Indians again? We will make progress. After all, this is just one more sickening attempt to shove a native populace with a 12,000-year-old history of nomadic lives into a smaller, tighter, meaner corner. Bob. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. As a matter of fact, you can hear Bob's program if you stay with us, if you're listening through the streaming from whiterosesociety.org. You can hear Bob's program after ours. He's on before we are, but White Rose Society rebroadcasts his program every night. These immigration laws, so-called, seven states are considering these. I think Progress has got this out there. So does Digby's website, several. Utah, there's a bill requiring immigrants to carry proof of status, require law enforcement officers to question anyone they believe is in the country illegally, and target employers who hire or transport undocumented immigrants. The status of this bill in Utah, the legislation still has to be drafted, but Representative Stephen Sandstorm, how's that for a name? Republican claims he, quote, has the support to do it, end quote. Georgia, right here. Nathan Deal, a racist son of a bitch, if ever one existed here in Georgia. Nathan Deal is running for governor. He wants to propose legislation that mirrors Arizona's. The status of that bill is tentatively pending Nathan Deal's election. I don't think he's going to get elected. Colorado. Colorado's gubernatorial candidate, Scott McGinnis, Republican, said that if he were governor, he would seek to pass something very similar to what Arizona enacted. The status of that is tentatively pending McGinnis's election. Maryland, State Delegate Pat McDonough, Republican, plans to start sending a survey to every candidate for the General Assembly, along with the candidates for governor, asking them whether they agree with Arizona's approach. The status of that, McDonough's survey will start being circulated this week as he hopes to, quote, know who is in favor of the Arizona bill and who is not, end quote, by the summer. Well, you know where he stands. Ohio. Butler County Sheriff Rick Jones and Ohio Representative Courtney Combs, Republican, sent a letter to Governor Ted Strickland asking him to employ his leadership role to assure legislation is passed that will mirror Arizona's. The status of that, Strickland's press person says he, quote, hasn't had an opportunity to review Arizona laws, concerned it might be unconstitutional. North Carolina. Local anti-immigrant groups claim that lawmakers have told them that, quote, the chances similar legislation will be filed here is over 95%. Status, the same groups also concede that such legislation won't get far in North Carolina. Texas, this is what Carol was talking about. Texas State Representative Debbie Riddle of Tomball says she plans to push for a law similar to Arizona's. Texas also, Farmers Branch, a Dallas suburb, 30,000 people passed an ordinance written by this racist group, their lawyer, Chris Kobach, which would prevent landlords from renting houses or apartments to undocumented immigrants. The status of that, last month, U.S. District Judge ruled the ordinance unconstitutional. Missouri, the state legislature is considering a law likely written by Chris Kobach, guy from Texas, that would make it unlawful for any person to conceal, harbor, transport, or shelter, quote, illegal aliens, end quote, and would also make it a crime for undocumented immigrants to transport themselves. Status, this bill has been referred to the Missouri State International Trade and Immigration Committee. Oklahoma. Proposed legislation restrict the ability of undocumented immigrants to obtain IDs or public assistance, give police authority to check the status of anyone arrested, and make it a felony to knowingly provide shelter, transportation, or employment to the undocumented. And I thought Oklahoma was full of Christians. This is just absolutely ripping Jesus Christ's tongue out, stomping it on the floor. Because if he said anything, he talked about this. They are. They're prying their Savior's mouth open, reaching inside, grabbing his tongue and his teeth and tearing them out and stomping on them. You crazy bastards. And Nebraska. Residents in Fremont, Nebraska likely will vote in July on a proposed ordinance to ban the, quote, harboring, end quote, hiring and renting to undocumented immigrants. Status of that, last Friday, the Nebraska Supreme Court upheld a lower court's ruling that there was no authority to stop an election on the ordinance following a petition filed by this Kobach bastard again. So there you have it. I mean, in so many of these cases, they are defying the rules of their Judeo-Christian deity. You know, Yahweh himself instructed these sick sons of bitches. I'm sorry, I know I promised not to use certain words again, but this is really making me angry. You know, because these people, if they do anything, they profess their Christianity, profess it, they'll slam you in the chops with it. And yet, their God and their God's Son both specifically and clearly told them not to do this. Anything remotely resembling this. This is how they spit on their own deities. They do. They're not about Christianity. They are not about godliness. They are about using their deities, their religion, to punish and hurt and torture and exploit whomever they choose to. Oh, and also to round up an awful lot of money from those who agree with this stuff. But I'm just telling you, you know, from an atheist point of view, because I understand your religion a hell of a lot better than you people do, you fundamentalist Christians, trust me on that one. But you are spitting on your own deity. You are cursing. You know, people say I shouldn't use the word goddamn because it takes the Lord's name in vain. You people are defiling. I mean, you're doing the worst thing you can. There was specific instructions. I quoted it to you out of your own book, where your God himself warned you not to do this. And as far as you're concerned, the rabbi that wandered around the Middle East that you claim was that God's son also warned you not to do it. You people are setting yourselves up to burn for eternity in your own constructed hell. You understand that? You people are crazy. I mean, the whole religion thing is madness anyway. But how can you profess to follow this deity that you created and his son that you invented, and yet you spit on their very words? How do you do that? How do you do that and not tremble in fear that your deity is not going to come thundering out of the sky and rip your ass into a million pieces, burn your home, salt the earth where you used to live, and curse your progeny for the next 2,000 generations? You people are nuts. You're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. You Christian fundamentalists who on the one hand profess this sick belief and on the other hand turn around and spit in the eyes of both your God and your God's son. Phony bastards. And people wonder why I am anti-religion. Whew. Good Lord. You know, I'm not defending any religion here, because I think they all are just weird as hell. But you really don't hear, okay, here we go. You really don't hear Jews and Muslims doing this, do you? Huh? Well, what about Palestine? Okay. But you really don't hear Jews and Muslims talking about, you know, unless the immigrant comes with guns and bombs and, I don't know. Don't get me involved in this. Oh, that's right. That old phrase is back now. My people used to be called WOPs. W-O-P. WOP. Without papers. We'll be right back. So old, I remember when that was a popular song on the radio. 10 before the hour, J.S. writes, one devout Jew who hates immigrants, William Crystal. Yeah, I don't mean to imply. I'm talking about the, you know, people who practice. Oh, never mind. I said I take it all back. I just don't want to get into it. It's just the fundamentalist Christians are the ones who you know, as much as Crystal may hate immigrants, he doesn't... Or does he operate or try to operate as someone to get this kind of legislation passed? Hold on. George in Oregon writes, Mike, just to add something to what Ignacio said earlier, it's all about benefiting the oligarchy. NAFTA was about giving the oligarchy more power, and all of us, Canadians, Americans, and Mexicans, less power. Mexico has been ruled by a corrupt oligarchy longer than the United States has, so we're just beginning to learn how it works. The oligarchy here wants to exploit the, quote, illegal, end quote, labor from Mexico, and since they're, quote, illegal, they won't dare to complain. That's why there's no enforcement against businesses who hire them, pay them peanuts, and treat them generally like slaves. I was in Seattle in 99 for the World Trade Organization protests. It slowed them down, but it didn't stop them. We heard speakers from all over the world who had the same message. It's all about enabling the oligarchy that now runs the empire. I also got to see how our joke of a media paid no attention to the 40,000 or so peaceful protesters who showed up at none of the rallies, only to chase a couple of dozen criminals that were taking advantage of the situation, burning dumpsters and breaking windows. And media reported that as the news. George in Oregon. Tough times, huh? Tough times. Alfredo is in Los Angeles listening on KTOK. Alfredo, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, just to let you know that I'm one of those, I used to be one of those illegal immigrants back in 1985.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hear this Arizona people saying that, you know, it's nothing about color, nothing about skin color, nothing about Latinos, but it's just about illegal immigrants, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, let me tell you about my story. You know, I'm Mexican from the city. Mm-hmm. I'm white, blue eyes, but I'm still Mexican, right?
Right.
When I first came to this country, you know, it was very unlike for me to get discriminated,
mm-hmm.
right? Just for the simple fact that I'm white, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And when they say something like, oh, you know what, it's not about the skin color or anything like that, it's just totally, everything is like, you know, totally a joke. Right, because I never got pulled over. Most of my friends got. When, you know, before we used to cross the border to go to a PJ party over there and come back. Most of my friends have papers, born in this country and everything. And they used to get stopped by the people there. And myself, since I was white, you know, they're like, oh, we're from U.S. City. No, come on in. That's it.
Right.
You know, that's one thing. The other thing, I didn't, you know, when I first I started working, 1985, I went to high school here, okay? That's why I used to take ESL classes and all stuff, you know, English as a second language.
Right.
And I started working, you know, made my way all the way up. Now I'm a business owner. I'm an employer, you know, I got most of my employees, you know. Mm-hmm. I hate to say it, but the ones with papers, you know, with documents and everything, those are the lazy ones. And the ones with, I don't know if it's correct to say, but, you know, I got three,
undocumented workers?
Yes, however you say it. And they double their work, you know, and we pay same amount of money. It's not like, oh, I'm gonna pay them less than the other ones, and those are going to be getting all the full benefits and all that. No, nothing like that.
Right.
And then you can tell, like, they're here to work. When they're, like, people complaining about immigrants coming to this country to take their jobs, that's BS.
Oh, sure.
You know what? It's just leaving their jobs. They don't like their jobs, you know? Like, okay, well, right now, you know, there's, like, a lot of factories closing up for business. A lot of the U.S. citizens, they got the fortune to get their unemployment benefits. Guess what? An immigrant or illegal alien, they can get no benefits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Although they're taking taxes from their check, and they never get to see it. Just like me, 15 years, from 1985 to 2000, I never got to see any income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I never got my money back. And I'm telling you because I used to be one of those guys, and I know how the game is played here in this country, you know?
Sure.
And you can see, you can hear all these people saying, you know what, you guys are like here, living free, taking advantage of our system, getting all our services. BS. If you don't have a social security card, there's no way you can get welfare. If you don't have a social security card, because I tried that myself,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't have a Social Security card or like a real Social Security number, just the way you can get unemployment, although you worked for all those years, just the way you can get unemployment.
Hey, Alfredo, listen, yes. I really enjoy what you're saying. The fact is, we're out of time. We have got to get out of here. I appreciate what you had to say. And, you know, I hope you'll call in again, because this situation, is not going to, quote, go away, end quote. It just isn't. And, you know, I'm concerned as a citizen of this country. It doesn't make any difference what my color is or my ethnic or racial background or, you know, what I believe or don't believe. I am a citizen here by virtue of birth. I have family members who were citizens here by virtue of getting their papers in order because they were immigrants. And this situation is not going to resolve on its own. It's going to take some leadership that we don't have in this country now. So anyway, if you, you know, if English is your second language, or whatever, I'd like to hear from you. We'll be off tomorrow night. Brad Friedman will be in here for us. We'll see you Friday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.